You're listening to the Changing the World Summit, where inspiring leaders from around the world share their secrets on having more impact in these times of change, and where you can participate in our project to remove over 1 million plastic bottles from the environment while providing impoverished entrepreneurs with an opportunity to thrive. I'm your host, Julia Steggy, with the pleasure of interviewing changemakers willing to share their secrets for having more impact. Listen to the entire interview series and make your donations to our plastics removal program at www.changingtheworldsummit.com.
Welcome to Changing the World Summit, and today I'm happy to have Ben Saltzman with me, the Enneagram guy. As the coach's coach, Ben is the igniter of human potential, an internationally known seminar facilitator, shadow dancer, Fortune 500 leadership trainer, and coach to spiritually minded multimillionaire entrepreneurs. As a radio personality, he was co-host of the Mind Body Spirit Show. Ben has a master's degree in organizational development from John F. Kennedy University, where he teaches regularly, and he taught seminars in the Enneagram and Transformational Coaching at the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology. He co-founded the Israeli Enneagram Center in Tel Aviv, Israel, where he facilitates the master-level classes. In corporate America, he's passed from CEO to CEO behind closed doors, and referred to as that magic coach in spiritual circles. He's known for breakthrough money manifestation and referred to as the money mystic who creates rainmakers for organizations. Thousands of people from many countries have been through his seminars in the past 20 years. Ben's coaching clients have raised hundreds of millions of dollars and invested billions of dollars in projects that support the saving of our environment and social justice causes. And you can get your free Enneagram assessment at touchedandtransformed.com. As new, beautifully magical website. So, Ben, welcome. Thanks so much for being a part of our Changing the World Summit.
Thank you, Julia. I'm so glad to be a part of it. I love what you're up to here.
Great. So let's dive right in. What is your world-changing mission and activity?
Yeah. So I believe that we change the world through two different ways. The first way that we can do this is by just bringing our unique expression, our gifts, out into the world without so much holding back and restraining ourselves and constraining ourselves and believing that we can't do it and kind of letting those voices get in the way. I think that we each have something that is just ours, our gift, our unique expression to bring to the world, and you know what that is. You've had hints of it if you're not totally sure what that is along your whole life usually. And part of changing the world is giving that gift with reckless abandonment. It's just like going and bringing it, and whatever that thing is that is yours to give, it's to give it. The other way I believe we change the world is through how we show up with other people, through our relationships, through what I call the evolution of our own consciousness. That I think that there's ways that we show up in the world that hold us back. We have unconscious motivations and fears and things that have us play small. And that as we do our inner work, as we reveal ourselves more fully and more richly and more deeply, that we can show up with more power, with more presence, with more authenticity, with more of who we are. And that's world-changing, that as one of us raises our vibration, as one of us shifts our consciousness, as one of us gets out of our old stuff and shows up in a new way, that we contribute dramatically to the world shifting. There's this 100th monkey, probably heard of the 100th monkey, that if enough of us do our inner work, if enough of us go more into connection or love or trust or faith, that everybody eventually gets the download. And I'm in on that. So I believe fully in this one. So I really support people in making those kinds of changes. So the way that they show up in the world shifts, the way that they show up in their relationships shifts, and they can bring their unique expression, their gifts, out to a world that desperately needs it.
And so has this been a process for you? Did you always, like, were you always into the Enneagram? And I'm going to have you share what that is. Or when you're, you know, coaching these high-level people or coaching people to go meet with Bill Clinton or whatever they're doing, did you always have this in your back pocket, or was it something that came later? How did that evolve?
I was coaching, and it started with people in leadership positions, and entrepreneurs too, pretty high level entrepreneurs. But I didn't have the Enneagram in my back pocket at the beginning. It wasn't until I had a master coach say to me, "Ben, you really want to do deeper level work. You know, you want to do work that moves beyond goal setting and time management and teaching skills." She could feel in me, you want to be able to shift how people actually show up. You got to check out this Enneagram thing. And at first I kind of poo-pooed it. I was like, whatever, you know, put me in a box, blah, blah, blah. Then nothing can kind of contain me. I'll show you. But then I was, you know, she hammered on me a little bit, and I went to see a panel. And when I went to see my own Type 7 panel, so there's 9 different personality types on the Enneagram, I'm a Type 7. So when I went to see the Type 7 panel, it just blew my mind. They were saying, describing their inner worlds and their reactivity and what was going on inside for them in words that I didn't have, but it was all true for me. Like everything that they were describing, oh, God, I wrestle with that. Oh, God, I do that over and over. Oh, that's why I keep on getting that result. And so it was both validating for me, like I'm not crazy. There's a bunch of other people that do the same weird thing I do.
Or we're all crazy.
But also kind of embarrassing at the same time. I was like, oh, no,
like,
don't tell them that.
Shining a light on you.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And, you know, there's a bunch of people in the room as we see a type of a group of sevens describe their inner world and do deeper work. And it's a real revealing, you know, you kind of feel like, oh, my God, we're taking our clothes off here and everybody's seeing
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of experience.
So you started realizing that you were wanting to help people go more deeply. And how did you start seeing that that was going to impact the world at a greater level?
So imagine that you're coaching. So I'm coaching, and a lot of the people that I'm coaching are investing millions and then billions of dollars. So it's kind of a small elite group, and they have the charter. They people want them to invest this money into organizations that are iconic, world-changing, and impacting the environment or social justice causes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, every time you're coaching somebody and they let go of the layer of fear, or they let go of a layer of I can't do it, and they embrace a more broad view of who they care about, which is part of what happens when we spiritually evolve. At first, we are kind of concerned about ourselves and our family, and then we start to raise our level of concern. We get concerned about our community, maybe our neighborhood or our school or our religious group that we're a part of, and then we expand even more. We start to care about maybe the state or the country, and then the world, the planet, and we kind of have that consciousness of I'm part of a global planet. So as I'm supporting these CEOs and investors and entrepreneurs, they're caring more and more about more and more people, so they make different choices with their $3 billion, and they're learning how to get along better with all the people who work for them. So So their social skills are improving. Their capacity to understand another person's world develops, which is another thing that happens when you start to do your spiritual work. You get to step into other people's point of view, see the world through their eyes, develop compassion for their pain. There's just, we get out of ourselves and we get to take the point of view of another at more depth. So that's a beautiful thing. When I can see those kinds of changes in the people that I'm working with and I go, oh, this is world changing. Where they're investing their billions of dollars shifts. The way that the people underneath them relate to their families and their friends and the people who work for them shifts. So it feels like it's real leveraged work with my one-on-one clients. So that's kind of the top end of the economic spectrum. Mm-hmm. Then we do seminars that are in the middle or the lower end of the economic spectrum, where people who can't afford, you know, one-on-one coaching can come and they get to both explore. I mean, you did some of this with us. You get to explore the stuff that's getting in the way of you bringing your gifts out and bringing your expression out. You get to go, oh, I'm scared of that. I didn't know that was what was running me. Or, oh, this is the place where I pull back from the people in my life at exactly the wrong time when I should be moving towards them or opening myself up or becoming more relational and more vulnerable. I'm contracting back and I'm folding my arms and pulling away from contact. Like, we get to see why we do that, and then we get to shift it. We get to transform it so that we can come forward, so that we can come out, so we can express ourselves more. I think enough of us do that, and we could save this planet. And, you know, we're kind of at a tipping point here. We're on the brink of either we kill ourselves or we love ourselves into a new generation. I mean, we're at a place where the more of us can do this kind of work and show up in the world with more openness and connectionessness and love and faith, like, we're at a tipping point here, and we need people on this side, on our side of the tipping point, instead of the other side, which looks like fear, divisiveness, us versus them thinking. You know, we're kind of fraying the fabric of our society in some level. Mm-hmm. And I think we've got a tool and a system that helps us come together. So I'm on a friggin' mission. Like, I want to get this out into the world.
Mm-hmm. So what do you? So I imagine that right when you first were introduced to the Enneagram and you saw your 7 panel.
Yeah.
You know, like, I learned about the Enneagram about almost 20 years ago, discovered I was a 6, you know, realized, oh, you know, some of this, at first I didn't even experience what they were saying. Like, your core fear, like, what fear?
Right.
And that was it for a while, you know, like, oh, I was supposed to be having fear here, you know. I just sort of learned about myself and learned about, then I read some stuff and I listened to some, you know, some other people that I found out, you know, about back then, and just kept it to myself.
Hmm.
I suppose you could have done the same thing and then had like your little safety niche of high-end clients and continued on your merry way doing your business. And what I'm wondering is, what had you take a leap where you're going to be this, where you're going to not only learn about yourself, you're going to learn about everyone else, you're going to bring it into your coaching business, and you're going to start coaching your people on this?
Hmm.
What makes you,
know,
you decide to take that leap? What's the...
Yeah. It might sound a little weird, but I always had this, there was some drive inside me that I wasn't that into the money side of things. Like, I like money, I like to generate money, But I really wanted to teach. Like there was, you know, I was saying earlier, we want to embrace our gifts and give them to the world with reckless abandonment. For me, that was clearly being in front of groups, teaching, holding space for transformation, supporting people to go through their transformational journey. Like as soon as I started dipping my toe into that water, I was in. And I had seen kind of sparks and little hints of that along the way of my life. So as I'm kind of coming into adulthood, I knew that that was something that I wanted to do. And I just wasn't going to stop. I mean, I was horrible at the beginning. There was nobody showing up for my events. I would stutter. If I was in front of larger groups, I would stutter. If I would try to have my own events, nobody would show up. I'd have 4 or 5 people in the room. I mean, it was just horrendous.
Well, 4 or 5 isn't nobody. But, you know, I want you to talk about that because, you know, this is enough to give to have somebody give, like, you know, somebody give up if they,
right.
they experience these challenges and they make it mean, you know, so let's say they're not dealing with their, you know, the challenges of their type,
mm-hmm.
their shadows, as it were, and they
yeah.
do this event and they spend all this money and 4 people show up and they lose money on it and they lost
yep.
all this time and it makes them feel like they are inadequate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you get it? What happens then? How do you keep going until you have a full room? There
yeah.
was standing room only at the one I went to.
I know. It's a deep dive. So my belief is at the time when we think we don't have any faith left that this thing can happen, we just got to go deeper down. That faith is something that you find and you deep dive into the nitty-grittiness of your soul and you pull it out and you go, I'm going to keep on going. Even though I'm scared, even though I've had failures, even though it's not working, I'm going to keep going. Why? Because this is what I'm supposed to be doing, because this feels right, because this brings me joy, because this brings other people joy. I mean, it was literally a decade where my coaching practice, my one-on-one coaching clients, fed my seminar habit. The money
oh,
from the one-on-one coaching would support me doing events that were losing money consistently. I mean, it was literally it's 10 years of that. But I just
wow, Ben,
had
I had
to do
no
it.
Idea.
Oh
wow,
yeah, it
that
was
is
brutal.
That's so inspiring. That's inspiring to me. Thank you for sharing
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
You know, not everyone wants
horrible.
To share about that kind of stuff.
No, it was really bad. And then, you know, kind of slowly, part of it is doing my own work. So as a type 7, let's get into the types a little bit here. So as a type 7, part of what 7s wrestle with is fear of pain and suffering, which we all have, but the 7s kind of get an exaggerated dose of that. So they just run from it, and it pulls them up into their head and away from their heart and their body. And away from deeper contact and connection. You know, there's kind of a lightness to the 7, to the dilettante, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, just surfing along the surface of the world. And people can feel that often in the 7s. So here I am, wanting to do deeper level work, actually inviting people sometimes into areas that are painful or where, you know, to reveal their vulnerabilities, but I can't hold it. I can't hold my own. I can't hold them. So, of course, I've only got 4 people in the room.
Mm-hmm.
So as I do my work, what's that?
You can only hold for 4, you know, otherwise.
Right, exactly.
I got it.
So as I do my inner work, I develop more ground, more breadth. I can hold my own suffering and pain and not get overwhelmed by it. I can hold other people's suffering and pain and not get overwhelmed by that. The relational skills, the capacity to pull people out of themselves comes more online as I develop more ground. When I'm in front of people, the type 7 kind of leaving my body and stuttering, and that goes away slowly. So I can present and have my creativity and my free thought and dynamic exchange with the audience. You know, it becomes more of a relational thing instead of me just delivering as I find my body and my heart. A number of times in seminars, my heart breaks open. And so there's like open crying or weeping being held by a room. So that was kind of a wild twist, where instead of me supporting them, they're supporting me sometimes. So all of this kind of develops a field that people can come into and they feel really safe. And that's, I think, when the seminars really started to get larger, and, you know, from 4 people to 20 to 50 to 100, you know, it's just things start to shift as we do our inner work. The world shows up in a new way and responds to us. And so that's really kind of what I wanted to bring back out was, oh my God, this Enneagram, particularly with the other tools that we combine it with, we can really get shift and change and transformation in these 9 types. Like, we're not stuck in our type. It's a thing that we do. It's a place that we come back to when we get stressed out and triggered. But we can evolve. We can step more fully into our own authentic expression. We can actually open our hearts and feel more love and connection with other humans. We can generate more income as we do our inner work. We can touch more souls as we learn how to create more relationship. That's huge. This is life-changing, world-changing work if we're willing to engage and really be honest about what we find inside of ourselves, which to me is usually the hardest thing, is to go in and tell the truth and do that subtle self-awareness and the self-inquiry and to look at, ooh, God, I do that. Oh, I don't, because our ego doesn't want us to see any of this. The ego's like, I'm going to go hide in the shadows because that's how it can live.
That's what I did. I mean, yeah. I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, gosh, this is just the most inspiring conversation for me personally, because 4 years ago, and I'm supposed to be leading groups, okay? And so 4 years ago, I say, okay, I'm finally going to do it, but I've got to do it perfectly, and I've got to do it big, and it has to be successful every time, and success has to look a certain way. And I did 2 events. They were sold out. There were 50 people at each event. One was 2 days. One was 3 days. I was completely exhausted after the first day both times. I was bleeding through, like having migraines. And the first time I did very well, actually. I was like, wow, if I do this twice a year, I'll like don't have to do anything else. But then when I didn't do as well the second time, even though it was a 3-day event, and some things didn't go the way I thought they should have gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, minor things like that, where we were going to do the meditation was loud with traffic. And then not only that, was it somebody came by with a weed whacker, just when I thought it was too loud. And so I just thought, oh, I'm not going to do this anymore. And I was, I think I might have ruined a relationship with somebody or else harmed a relationship with somebody that had contributed something because I was just so angry about my results. And I have not done a live event since then. And then I listened to you and you're like, I did these events where 4 people came and we lost money and I had to use my coaching income to cover my seminar habit. And I'm thinking, oh, wow, that gives me so much freedom to just fail, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
And I didn't have that freedom, and I didn't have that freedom to the degree that I stressed out for 2 months prior with all the, you know, because the 6 Enneagram, worst case scenario, you know. So I was, like, nightmarish with no one's going to show. And no one's going to buy my package. And then it's going to, I'm going to look, you know, then it's, I'm going to be a failure. And I don't even know if I went further than that in terms of what that would that mean. Just that was enough that I wouldn't do it anymore. I actually did increase my income by about $60,000 that year from those events. So my definition of success was ridiculous.
Right.
It was like I had to have a six-figure launch every time, you know, I had to have a full thing, you know, every time, has to grow every time. And people were coming up to me saying this was the most transformational event they'd been to, and I wasn't present to even receive it. Barely now, four years later, can I receive that, you know, when they still tell me, oh, that event, you should be doing events. That event was so transformational. So you've just given me permission, Ben. I could fail for 10 years, and I could call it my seminar habit, and you know, fail would be success if somebody comes.
Right,
and
exactly.
I just, you know, I just plan to be in a transformational conversation. You know, I want to do something like Women Who Won't Be Silent or something like that, right? Don't care about who comes. We're just going to talk about how do you overcome your fear of being seen and come out and say what you're meant to say for the world.
Yep.
So thank you. Wow, that was...
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad to hear that.
I just feel so inspired by your 10 years of failure, you know, as it were, quote unquote, because it's really a success story. You know, everyone thinks like, oh, well, once they know that you're there, they think you were there the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, now when I hear you
it's
doing
crazy.
All, I hear you acting out all the, I saw you acting out the 8 Enneagram, which is the anger guy, right? The anger expression guy, and you didn't stutter once.
Yeah, that's right. It feels really good now. I mean, it's, you know, that was one of the beautiful consequences of doing my own inner work, is that everybody before used to appear as judgmental, kind of checking me out, not really in. And as I did my own inner work, all of a sudden, oh, now the happy, kind, loving people are showing up. Everybody's, you know, in support of me and really wanting to do the work. And, you know, it's when we change inside, the world shows up in a new way. You know, it's, I think it's all still the same people. It's just me that's changed. And I love hearing... So I just want to frame this up for the people who are on the call. I just want to frame up what happens inside the Type 6 and how beautiful this shift is for you, Julia. So for the 6 is one of the core fears that's underneath there. We all have a little bit of fear. The 6s get fear on top of fear. Their fear is the world is a dangerous place, and there's lots of hazards, and it's going to get me. And if I don't pay attention to the hazards, if I don't pay attention to all the things out there that might get me, then something horrible is going to happen. And so they tend not to take as much action as would be supportive of them. They tend to shy away from risk. Or on the other side, they can go recklessly into dangerous situations, recklessly into risk. And in neither one of those cases are they really present. They're not actually empowered and present and available to make changes or have creative responses or really feel themselves in the situation. Because in both of those situations, they're dealing with underlying anxiety and pulling away from it or charging into it. Mm-hmm. So as the 6s evolve, they develop more trust and more faith. They develop more ground. And there's more of a willingness to take risks. And they don't believe the fears quite so much. They get a little bit of space from those fears Their mind can run the worst case scenarios. The mind can run to, oh, it's going to be horrible and I'm going to die and nobody's going to show up or whatever. But they don't believe all those worst case scenarios so much. They don't totally get taken by them. So they can still be in action. They can still take risks. They can still do things that would bring their heart joy, in spite of the fact that sometimes the fear shows up. So when I hear that you're getting inspired and that you can jump back into the pool, I'm like, oh, yeah, Julia, this is evolution in the moment right here.
Well, yeah, right here, transformation. Well, you know, then I was like, well, let's see if we actually schedule, you know, an event. But it gives me a lot more freedom. You know, I really do appreciate your willingness to share that vulnerable, you know, experience, because, you know, for the most part, we do want to look good. And 10 years is a long time to be really committed to something that is, you know, is it's just showing up small for now. And I just commend that you did that and are a great example for others who, you know, you have an idea, you want to change the world in some way. You know, you know that you have a particular, my dogs are all getting all excited in the background. You know, you have a particular purpose, you have a message or something, or there's some kind of modality that you found that you want to share. And, you know, there may be a perfectionism there that where it has to be perfect before you do it, or you have to be successful out the gate. So you're trying to figure out, I guess that's like a sixth thing too, right? Trying to figure out how not to fail in advance of ever doing anything, you know, with all the possible ways of failing coming up, and then trying to set these things in order and not, and then eventually I just had to do it. But I had not transformed my mind around what I was doing. You know,
well,
I wasn't
a big
as
part of
into
this,
it.
A big part of this is getting into action around doing the thing that you're scared of that you really want to do, and not having it be perfect. Be willing to be messy. And be willing to get feedback, not from our thoughts of what we think is going to happen, but actually try it and get feedback from the world and from other humans.
Mm-hmm. That was going to be my next question. Like, what's your best advice for the would-be change makers? And it's really
you gotta get into action. Totally.
Yeah.
Be willing to get messy and do it wrong and screw up and get feedback. And go, okay, well, not like that, like this. Oh, that's not exactly the way I'm supposed to do it. They're telling me I'm supposed to do it like this. All right, I'll try that. You know, so there is a lot of rounds of developing your own skills, of learning how to say it so people can hear it, of getting clear and clear on what you're bringing. You know, the hero's journey, which is what we're talking about taking here. I mean, this is a big framework for the hero's journey, is when we leave the station, when we leave our peaceful home, when we go out into the world, we are not the person that is going to fulfill on the mission that we set out for. You don't have the skills yet. You don't have the internal fortitude yet. You don't have the connections of friends who will support you along the journey yet. You can't do the thing that you were supposed to do yet. But that doesn't stop us from going. We still go. We take the action, we put it out, we move into the world because we become the person that can fulfill on the mission along the way. We learn those skills. The random people show up when we move out into the world boldly. The people who are supposed to be there to help us along the way, they show up because
we're
in action. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, our friends and our comrades and our teachers and our mentors, they show up along the way because we're in action, because we're moving forward, because we're not just holding back and thinking about it or planning or developing more skills, because we are in action. they show up and we develop the skills and we develop the fortitude along the way, because it never looks exactly how it does when you're starting. You know, that image that we have of what the end result, it never, you know, all of the interesting people in my life, all of the successful people in my life, they didn't know what it was going to look like at the end when they started. They just went. They just jumped. it's happening. Oh, this is the direction. Yep. Oh, wow, that person's helping me. Oh, this is how it's supposed to look.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm thinking that a lot of that really relates to this summit, too. You know, just what do I know about doing a summit, you know? So just dive in, do it, and it's really actually becoming a very beautiful experience for pretty much everyone involved. So, yeah, imperfect action. You know, we can get coached to take it, but that example is just really cogent for me. Thank you. So let's talk about what we're doing with this fundraiser that, you know, I wanted to have a real impact through this summit. Yes, I love it. I love being inspired. I thought, well, beyond just being inspired, let's take action that's measurable to have a positive impact in the world together as a collective. And so we came up with the Changing the World Toolkit. And this toolkit is a combination of everyone who's been part of this summit, their work and their best contribution for helping our change makers to take the next step. And at a level of 197 donation to the project, you get the toolkit. So we'll get into what Ben is contributing for the toolkit in a second. But I want to say that for those that haven't heard about the fundraiser yet, this is your first interview, we're in partnership with Project O, which is all about protecting the ocean, founded by Rich Gurman, who's one of our speakers. We are funding a project that is to, our goal is to remove over a million plastic bottles from the environment before they reach the ocean, while helping to relieve poverty. So there's a organization called Plastic Bank, and they're the recipient of our fundraiser this year through Project O. And they provide people in impoverished areas overrun by plastic an entrepreneurial opportunity to radically increase their financial income while removing plastic from the environment that then gets collected by Plastic Bank and distributed, resold to the plastics manufacturers so they don't have to create new plastic. So it
nice.
Closes the circle. So we're looking to, through the Changing the World Toolkit, to remove over a million bottles from the environment. And we'll be able to count through the amount of money that we raise how much of impact we have. So we have two levels. You can donate at any level, actually, or any amount. But at $35, you get plastics neutral status, where you've basically offset your plastic, the average plastic usage of an American or somebody in the Western culture. And then at the 197 level, you get the Changing the World Toolkit, which includes all of the programs from our speakers. So Ben is providing the Enneagram Transformations for World Changers. And what is essential about this is well, first you're going to take your Enneagram assessment, and then so that you know what type you are, then you're going to learn what the critical transformations that will assist you in your world-changing impact. So with this map, it's like a metaphysical map. You'll discover what your type looks like before and after transformation, bringing clarity to what's been holding you back and how you can move forward towards your purpose. You want to say a little bit about the critical transformations, Ben?
Yeah. I mean, you've heard a little bit for me and Julia what our transformation looks like. And basically, for each of these nine types, there are hidden fears, there are hidden emotional triggers, there's the ways that you play small. And we often don't know what those are because they're hidden, because they're unconscious. And so through the Enneagram, you discover what those things are that have been holding you back. They come out into the light, and then we get to shift them and transform them and show up in the world in a new way. So we have more impact. So we can touch more souls. That transformation looks really different for each of the nine types on the Enneagram. So this this map gives you the before, a description of your type before, and then this is the critical transformation for you to bring your unique expression out. This is the critical transformation for you to create more connection in relationship, for you to market your goods or your services, or to bring your voice out to the world. There are some really specific internal shifts, transformations that you need to go through. And just knowing what those are starts to catalyze the change. Like you move into personal evolution and development. There's something about getting clear on where am I supposed to go that our psyches, that our inner world starts to shift. So I think that this is a kind of a beautiful jump start for people who are wanting to do their inner work to bring their unique expression out into the world.
Great. Thanks so much for your contribution, Ben. And do you have any last words for our listeners who want to make a greater impact?
Yeah, I would say two things. First, let the inspiration move you into action. I'm hoping that this was inspirational for you, mm-hmm. and that you can get into action and get out into the world and bring your expression out in a bigger way. And the second thing I would say is get a hold of your Enneagram type and do your inner work, because it's holding you back and you don't even know how. And whether that's doing it with us in our events and seminars or with somebody else in their events and seminars, find a person that you're comfortable with doing some inner work with, because it'll dramatically impact how many people you can touch, how much of the world you can change. Like where you get to have your impact and how big that impact is largely dependent on this inner work. So go for it.
Thank you, Ben, and thanks for your willingness to be a vulnerable leader on the path to transformation. It makes a difference.
It's my pleasure.
Where you can show up authentically like this.
I know. I used to not be this authentic, and it sucked. Being more vulnerable and real and authentic with people feels way better in my system. So it's not just good for you. It's good for me, too.
Yeah, and good for the world. All right, thank you.
Thanks, Julia.
Thank you for listening to the Changing the World Summit, where inspiring leaders from around the world share their secrets on having more impact in these times of change. To participate in our project to remove over 1 million plastic bottles from the environment, please visit www.changingtheworldsummit.com now and make your contribution.